David Meekin had no more questions to ask, and he glanced at Isabella inquiringly. I see you were born in Cape Town, Mr. Africa, she spoke for the first time. Do you still have South African citizenship? You haven't taken naturalized British citizenship? No, Dr. Courtney, Ben shook his head. I am still a South African. I have a passport issued by South Africa House here in London. Good. Can you tell us something about your family? Do they still live in Cape Town? Both my father and my mother were schoolteachers. They were killed in a motor accident in Cape Town in 1969. I'm sorry. She glanced down at her file. It was possible that Tara, their mother, had tried to conceal the facts of Ben's birth by contriving a false birth certificate. She could check that easily enough. She looked up again. I hope you will forgive my next question, Mr. Africa. It may sound impertinent. However, Capricorn Chemicals is a defence contractor to Arms Corps, and all its employees are vetted by the South African Security Police. It would be best if you tell us now if you are or have ever been a member of any political organisation. Ben smiled softly. He really was a good-looking young man. By some fortunate chance, he seemed to have inherited the best features from both sides of his racial ancestry. "You want to know if I am a member of the ANC?" he asked, and Isabella's mouth tightened with annoyance. "Or any other radical political organization," she said curtly. "I am not a political creature, Dr. Courtney. I am a scientist and an engineer. I am a member of the Society of Engineers, but of no other body." "So, he was not interested in politics?" She remembered the bitter political argument they had become embroiled in at their last meeting. When was that? Almost 8 years ago, she realized with surprise. Of course, the Red Rose instructions that she had received gave the lie to his protestations. Nonetheless, she had to cover herself. Again, you must pardon the personal nature of my questions, but your frank replies now may save us all a great deal of embarrassment later. You must be aware of the racial situation in South Africa. As a coloured person, you will not be allowed to vote, and furthermore, you will be subject to a body of legislation and a policy known as apartheid, which, to say the least, restricts many of the freedoms which you will have taken as your natural right here in England. Yes, I know all about apartheid, Ben agreed. Then why would you want to give up what you have here and return to a country where you'll be treated as a second-class citizen, and where your prospects of advancement will be limited by your skin tone? I am an African, Dr. Courtney. I want to go home. I think I can be of service to my country and my people. I believe I can make a good life for myself in the land of my birth. They stared at each other for long seconds, and then Isabella said softly, I can find no fault with those sentiments, Mr. Africa. Thank you for coming to talk to us. We have your address and telephone number. We will contact you one way or the other just as soon as we are able to do so. When Ben had left, neither she nor Meekin spoke for a while. Isabella stood up and moved to the window. Looking down into the square, she saw Ben leave the front door of the building. As he buttoned his overcoat, he glanced up and saw her in the second-floor window. He lifted one hand in farewell, and then set off towards Pont Street and turned the corner. Well, said David Meekin beside her, we can cross that one off the list. For what reason? Isabella asked, and Meekin was flustered. He had expected her to agree immediately. His qualifications, his experience. The colour of his skin, Isabella suggested. Well, that too, Meekin nodded. He would be in a position at Capricorn where he might have to give orders to white employees. He might actually have white females under him. It would cause ill feelings. There are at least a dozen black and coloured managers in other Courtney companies, Isabella pointed out. Yes, I know, Meekin acceded hurriedly. But they have coloureds and blacks under them, not whites. My father and my brother are both very eager to advance blacks and coloureds to managerial positions. My brother in particular feels that bringing all sections of our community to prosperity and responsibility is the only recipe for long-term peace and harmony in our country. I would agree with that 100%. I found Mr. Africa a most personable young man. I agree that he is a little young and lacking in experience for either of the senior posts. However, Meekin changed tack like the corporate survivor he was. Well, I'd like to suggest that we shortlist Africa for the post of technical assistant to the director. I agree with your suggestion wholeheartedly, Isabella smiled, her sweetest, most winning smile. Her estimate had been correct. David Meekin's most firmly held principles were subject to negotiation. They finished the interview with the last candidate at 4 o'clock that afternoon, and as soon as Meekin had left Cadogan Square to return to the Berkeley Hotel, Isabella telephoned her mother. The Lord Kitchener Hotel, good afternoon. She recognised her mother's voice. Hello, Jatara, it's Isabella. And then for emphasis, Isabella Courtney, your daughter. Bella, my baby. It's been ever so long. Let's see now. 8 years at least. I thought you'd forgotten your old mama. She always made Isabella feel guilty. And she made a lame excuse. I'm sorry, Tara. The pace of life. I don't seem to have time for anything. Yes, Mickey tells me that you have been ever so successful and clever. He says that you are Dr. Courtney now and a senator, Tara gushed on. Mind you, Bella, how you can bring yourself to have anything to do with that bunch of racist bigots that call themselves the National Party. In any civilized society, John Forster would have been sent to the gallows years ago. Tara, is Ben there? Isabella cut her off. I thought it was too good to be true that my own daughter wanted to talk to me. Tara's tone was martyred and long-suffering. I'll call Ben. Hello, Bella. He came on the phone almost immediately. We must talk, she told him. Where? He asked, and she thought swiftly. Hatchard's. The bookshop in Piccadilly. Okay. When? Tomorrow, 10 in the morning. Ben was in the African fiction section, thumbing through a Nadine Gordimer novel. She stood beside him and picked a book at random from the shelves. Ben, I don't know what this is about. I'm applying for a job, Bella. It's as simple as that. He smiled easily. I don't want to know either, she went on quickly. Just tell me, do you really have valid papers in the name of Africa? Tara registered my birth in the name of a coloured couple, friends of hers. She was never married to my father, and of course their relationship was illegal. She could have been imprisoned for being in love with Moses Garma and giving birth to me. His tone was easy. There was even a light smile on his lips. She looked for some sign of bitterness or anger, but found none. Officially, my name is Benjamin Africa. I have a birth certificate and a South African passport in that name. I have to warn you, Ben, there is terrible bitterness and hatred in the Courtney side of the family. Your father was convicted of murdering Nana's second husband. I mean Santon Courtney Malcolmes's husband. Yes, I know. You and I will never be able to acknowledge each other in South Africa. I understand. If Nana, if my grandmother or my father ever found out about you, well, I don't know what the consequences would be. They won't find out about it from me. If it was up to me, I would not... She broke off and lowered her voice. Ben, be careful. We have never had a chance to become close. A chasm divides us. Nevertheless, you are my brother. I don't want anything to happen to you. Thank you, Bella. He was still smiling softly, and she knew that she could never penetrate the curtain. She went on quietly. I will warn Michael that you are coming home. Please believe me that I will help you in any way that I can. If you need me, let Michael know. It would be best if we do not contact each other once you arrive in the country. Impulsively, she dropped the book she was holding and embraced him. Oh, Ben, Ben, what a terrible world we live in. We are brother and sister, and yet it's cruel and inhuman. I hate it. Perhaps we can help to change the world. He returned her embrace quickly, and then they drew apart. There are many things that I can never tell you, Ben. Forces beyond our control. If we try to oppose them, we will be crushed. They are too powerful for us. Still, some of us must try. Oh, God, Ben, you terrify me when you speak like that. Goodbye, Bella, he said sadly. I think we might have been good for each other, if only things had been ordained differently. He placed the Gordimer novel back on the shelf, and without looking back, walked out into Piccadilly. Over the years, it had become traditional that whenever Isabella was in Johannesburg, she stayed with Gary and Holly. Before she gave up her career to become a full-time wife and mother, Holly had been one of the leading architects in the country. Her designs had won international awards. When they came to build their own home, Gary, who was never one to stint, had given her an open budget and egged her on to design her final masterpiece. She had managed to combine opulence and space with such good taste and invention that their home was Isabella's favourite retreat. She preferred it even to Feltefrieden. As always, the family breakfasted on the man-made island in the centre of the miniature lake. On a morning such as this, when the Highveld sunshine decked the world in splendour, the roof of the pagoda had been rolled back by its electrically powered machinery and was open to the sky. The flocks of pink flamingo on the lake shore were free-ranging birds persuaded to interrupt their continental migrations by this jewel-like stretch of open water. The older children were in school uniform, ready to leave for their daily penance. Isabella was feeding the latest addition to Gary's family, her year-old goddaughter, an exercise which they both enjoyed immensely. It aroused all Isabella's frustrated maternal instincts. Gary, in his shirt sleeves and broad, brightly coloured braces at the head of the breakfast table, had just lit his first cigar of the day. "Who was the one that accused me of being squeamish?" Isabella demanded of him, as she shovelled a teaspoonful of egg into her goddaughter's mouth and then scraped up the overspill as it trickled down her chin. "It's not a case of squeamishness at all," Gary protested too loudly. "I've got 5 meetings this morning and Holly's charity ball this evening. Give me a break, Bella." "You could have cancelled any one of those meetings," Isabella pointed out. "Or all of them." "Look, Mavourneen, there'll be so many politicians and generals crowding the place that there is nothing I could add to the proceedings." "Don't come over all Irish with me, Begorra. You're funking it, Teddy Bear, and we both know it." Gary let out one of his evasive guffaws and turned to Holly. "What time do we have to be there this evening, lover?" But Holly was in Isabella's side. "Why are you making Bella go through with this awful business?" she demanded. "I'm doing no such thing." Gary was unconvincingly indignant. "It's her decision entirely." He glanced at his wristwatch and then growled with theatrical menace at his children. "You monsters are going to be late for school. Come on, get out of it." They showed not the least sign of terror as they lined up to kiss him goodbye and then clattered off over the bridge like a squadron of cavalry. "Me too," Bella wiped her goddaughter's face and stood up. But Gary stopped her. "Look, Bella, I apologize. I know I hinted that you couldn't take it. You're as tough as any man I know. You don't have to prove it." "Oh, so you admit you're chickening out, then?" she asked. "All right, all right," he capitulated. "Hell, I don't want to watch it. You don't have to either." "I am a director of Capricorn," she said, and gathered up her handbag and briefcase. "I'll see you at 8. As she climbed into the Porsche, she felt a twinge of guilt. The true reason for her determination to witness the Syndex 25 tests was not one of duty, not even to demonstrate her toughness. The last Red Rose communique she had received had promised her access to Nicky as soon as she reported that the tests had been successfully carried out. The drive down to Germiston took her a little over an hour on the new highway. Holly had designed the Capricorn Chemicals plant, and her taste and touch were distinctive. It did not look like a factory. There were lawns and trees, and a cunning exploitation of the terrain so that the least pleasing features of the industrial buildings were disguised or concealed. Those buildings that she had been able to clothe in glass and natural stone were given prominence. The various units were scattered over many hundreds of acres. The prancing goat figure of the Capricorn logo surmounted the main entrance gateway. Isabella pressed her electronic key card into the lock, and the gates trundled open. The uniformed guards saluted her as she drove through.